Your favorite Voice America Talk Radio Network shows and hosts are in your car, outdoors, and wherever you need them to be.
Listen anywhere.
Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Sports Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericasports.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
No, he didn't slam you, he didn't bump you, he didn't nudge you, he rubbed you. And rubbing, son, is racing.
Gentlemen, start your engines.
This is Pit Pass USA, the fastest auto racing location on the internet, with the latest news, the best interviews, and our own brand of commentary. Here's your host, Larry Henry.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Pit Pass USA. We have returned back to our home base in the Detroit, Michigan area after 26 days in Daytona Beach, Florida. I left 78 degrees Monday afternoon at Daytona. I arrived in Detroit. It was about 18 degrees. We'd had 10 inches of snow the night before, and the freeways were still messed up. And finally got straightened up early this morning. We're looking at more heavy snow later this weekend. But that's the price you pay when you live up in the state of Michigan. I did enjoy my time down at Daytona. Saw some great racing. Just incredible run during speed weeks. Of course, we had the Wood Brothers winning the Daytona 500 with Trevor Bayne. We'll talk about that. In a little bit, we will talk to Eddie Wood, one of the co-owners of the car, the Wood Brothers Motorcraft Ford Fusion. I think the Brian Keselowski story and the Gatorade duels where his younger brother Brad pushed him into the field. We'll talk to Brian. I've known Brian for a long time. I probably know his trials and tribulations better than most journalists who probably never even knew who he was until he made the Daytona 500. That was just a great story. I thought we had great racing at Daytona. A lot of people didn't like the two-car packs. I loved them. I thought they were very exciting through the day. And this weekend, the NHRA Full Throttle Drag Racing Series gets underway. They will be at Pomona where they begin and end the season out in California. We'll talk to Alan Johnson, the driver of the Mopar Dodge Avenger in the NHRA Pro Stock Division, about that. And then we'll get into a few things that are on my mind at the end of the show tonight. So all in all, it's a pretty action-packed show.
One of the great stories in racing in the Daytona 500, of course, rookie Trevor Bayne winning, and maybe because it's the Wood Brothers involved, and I got Eddie Wood with us. Eddie, congratulations, man. It's been an uphill battle for you guys.
Thank you, sir. Yes, it's kind of been uphill. Everything that's, you know, the last 4 to 6 months when, you know, we got connected with Trevor, things started to fall into place. It was never any big decisions made. Everything we did from the day we started back at Texas was little bitty steps. And even the Pearson paint scheme, that was like one morning. Hey, you know, we ought to just paint this thing red and white. I'll call Motorcraft and ask them. I said, yeah, that's a good idea. It was no big plans for nothing. It's just everything just started falling into place just a little bit at a time, and it just kept getting better. You know, like we'd be fortunate enough to be standing somewhere and the right guy walked by and he'd do this and he'd do that. It's just like this thing was meant to be.
You know, you guys have struggled so long to keep the operation going and be at the racetrack. You cut back to just a handful. You up it every year, and you keep getting closer and closer and closer. I know last year with Bill Elliott, you were getting some good results that you thought, and you kept saying, man, we want to do this full-time. We want to do this full-time, but you knew you needed to take the baby steps. And I know I talked to you before. It was just kind of killing you to do that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I got out of college in 72, and I had been to every race every week since 1972. And then all of a sudden you cut back to half the races. And the first week, you know, we ran Daytona that year, and the next race was Fontana, and we didn't go. And I was just like, I didn't know how to act. I didn't know where to go. I didn't know what to do. I'd never been home. I didn't know there was another side of life. I'd always been race on Sunday, travel Thursday, qualify Friday, practice Saturday, race Sunday. It's been like that all my life. And the limited schedule, you know, kind of got us, we kind of got caught up with our family stuff, you know, our mom and dad, you know, they were 85 and 80, and we got to spend a lot of time with them, and that was good. But now, you know, if we can, we always want to go back racing full time, and hopefully with this win, you know, maybe somebody will step up and we can get enough to go do it.
Did you ever think you'd win with a rookie, though? I mean, that's not what the Wood Brothers do.
I mean, it's actually, you know, he's the youngest kid that we've ever had in our car. And I don't know. When I first met him, it just was something special about him. I couldn't put my finger on it, but it was just something special. And obviously there is. But you could see it. You could feel it. I mean, he just seemed like the right thing to do. Like I said, this whole thing is like it was meant to be, you know, from the start to now.
I know Daytona is such a special place for all racers. How much work did you guys put in getting that car ready in Messiah? Because it was quick from day one here at Daytona.
Well, Donnie and the guys did a really good job. And like I said, it was built by Roush Fenway. The chassis and the body was hung, but then we did all the finish work under Donnie's leadership over at our shop. And they started working on that thing probably in late November, early December when we got it. And they worked a lot of weekends, 7 days, all day long, a lot of nights, you know, just to get it exactly right. Because at Daytona, a lot of times the thing that separates the fast cars from the okay cars is just attention to detail. And that's what Donnie is really big on. And when I say that, it's just little things. But the little things is what makes a difference in restrictor plate racing.
I thought the one great thing, too, not only were the drivers and various people that showed up in Gatorade Victory Lane, but when that checkered flag fell, even if someone was a Dale Jr. fan or a Jeff Gordon fan or whatever fan, they were all on their feet cheering, not only for Trevor Bayne, but that the Wood Brothers got a victory.
That's what everybody tells me. I didn't, you know, I was in shock because I didn't, you know, we started leading the thing in the green-white checker, and I figured we were just kind of a setting duck. I figured that, like Trevor, I thought the second pack would come by and drive by. And when they came, you know, they went by one to go, you know, and we're still leading. And I thought, well, if caution comes out, we'll win. Because I didn't think it could hold them off that long, and he did. But I do remember the people that was around my pit box that it came down there. Mark Martin came down. Chad Knaus came down. Edsel Ford was standing beside of me with his three kids, and it was just like everybody was hugging each other. And so I didn't see a lot of other than what was going on in my immediate area, but everybody's telling me that the whole garage and the stands was really behind us, and that's what it's all about. You know, it's like these people here, they paid to get in here, and that's pretty cool.
Well, and this also gets you get back on the map, it seems like. I mean, okay, the Wood Brothers, kind of an afterthought, and has been, unfortunately, for the last several years. But now you guys are at the front. What you did at Daytona, the whole car. I mean, do you feel it? Do you go, man, now let's go out. We've won one. Let's win two.
Let's win two. Yeah, I mean, you feel like that all the time. You know, let's go win a race. And now that this one is behind us, and it's almost like you finally got to the point that you feel like you're back competitive. And you know, we got to go to Phoenix this week and back it up, and hopefully we will. We got a brand new car going out there, and it just feels good. You know, it's like I said, we've struggled so much in the last couple of 3 years, and actually we got a little bit better, and now we cut back the schedule, and Bill Elliott was fortunate enough. I mean, we were fortunate enough for him to stay with us, and he helped us get our stuff straightened out, and it just, like I said, things just worked out.
Got to have you repeat the story of what you did going out to celebrate your Daytona 500 win on Sunday night in Daytona.
We were in teardown till about 10 o'clock, 10:15 or something like that, and every year
whether we, you know, we finish last or whatever, we always go to Steak and Shake. We eat breakfast at Steak and Shake, go through the drive-thru every morning when we're down here. And when we pull up to the speaker, there's a lady named Shelly. And I'll say, two hamburgers. We get the, Lynn likes ketchup, and I like mustard. So I just usually go his way because I'm doing usually the one ordering it. So I say, two hamburgers, and I don't even have to finish it. The lady finishes it for me. That's how, I mean, I promise you eat there every morning.
Well, maybe Steak and Shake ought to come on board as a sponsor.
I actually sent them a proposal a couple of years ago, and I probably didn't do a very good job of. That's one of my first proposals I'd ever sent out, so I may give them a call again.
Well, you repeat this story enough, they ought to say, you know, that we can get some pretty good advertising out of state. Daytona 500 winner and goes and celebrates at Steak and Shake.
Yeah, we got the right colors. I mean, you know, we're red and white, and they're kind of black and white and red. So it'd work out, you know, and maybe get on the deal and get free hamburgers. I don't know.
I know athletes always say they got a 24-hour rule after a big win or a big loss. Do you have to do that now? And the whole team, okay, we celebrated 24 hours. We got the rest of the season, all the races you're going to race right now with the sponsorship you got. We got to get ready for Phoenix. Get your heads out of the clouds. It's back to the grind.
Oh, yeah, yeah. As soon as we get Jack sent his plane back down here to get us. So when we get back to the shop, which will be, I'm going to guess, around 2 o'clock, we've got to dyno the Phoenix car and the Vegas car today. And if it takes till midnight, it'll just take that. But and then the hauler has to leave probably Wednesday morning with the Phoenix stuff. And then another hauler will leave to swap it out with the Vegas stuff. So it's, yeah, and then you can really enjoy the whole thing until when you sign in, when you show up at Phoenix on Friday, this one's over. This is a new one, you know, which is what's cool about NASCAR racing. Every week is a new chapter, a new story, you know, and it's always different. It's always good.
Eddie, congratulations, and you look good in that champion's jacket.
I like this. This is good. Nice. Thank you.
That is Eddie Wood, one of the co-owners of course, the Wood Brothers number 21 car, the Motorcraft Ford Fusion that won the Daytona 500. I was talking to him Monday morning. Daytona 500 experience is now kind of for their Daytona tours, but they still put the winning car in. And I actually emceed a Q&A session with Trevor Bayne, Eddie Wood, Len Wood, and Donnie Wingo. Trevor Bayne was just absolutely the kid is something special. There's no question about that. He showed me his championship ring. He celebrated by playing hoops and skateboarding back by the motorhome, if you can believe that. He's been on a whirlwind tour all across the country the last few days. And a lot of people are wondering, I mean, here's a kid that's just turned 20 this past weekend. He wins the Daytona 500 in only his second start in the NASCAR Sprint Cup Series. He's getting fame, fortune, being flown all over the country, TV shows, interviews, you name it. How is he going to handle it? We've seen people that have been veterans that have fallen apart handling the pressure and go down a bad path. Trevor Bayne, well, he actually talked about that yesterday to the media. He was actually talking on his cell phone, I believe, in San Francisco yesterday on handling all the fame that is coming his way now since winning the Daytona 500 on Sunday.
It can be good and bad both ways, and that's where I just have to be true to who Trevor Bayne is. I mean, I don't want to ever have anything to hide. You know, I want to be as public as possible and as truthful as possible and just be the person, the same person that I am in the media as I am away from it, you know, and I've tried to do that and just tried to stay humble through it all. I mean, it is crazy how much attention has been drawn to this, and, you know, I never expected it in years, and I'm so thankful for the fact that this might help our race teams, you know, be able to find partners to go on these race cars. I had that solid white suit on for the Roush Fenway Nationwide car, and That thing was not looking good, so I hope this draws some more interest. But you're right. I mean, it does draw some attention that might be a lot to handle. But, you know, I know that God's not going to give me more than I can handle with him. Might be too much for Trevor Bayne to handle, but never too much for him to handle. So, you know, there's going to be days when, you know, before this, I ever made this decision to run for the Wood Brothers in the Cup this year. You know, I just prayed that whatever would happen would be something that would draw me closer to him. And, you know, I was thinking it was going to be because of struggles. I was thinking it'd be because it was tough and we were doing that. And, And now it's because of the success. So just got to maintain the manage the mountaintops and know that there might be bad days ahead, but just accept these and be really excited about them when we do get them, because this is all good for the sport, and we're really excited about everything.
That is Trevor Bayne. He does have his head at least screwed on straight right now, and we'll see what happens this weekend. They are out at Phoenix. Maybe they can win two in a row. By the way, just a quick note, that win at Daytona, it's the third straight NASCAR Sprint Cup victory by a Ford. And they also finished first, second, and third at Daytona, which was their 600th win in NASCAR Sprint Cup. Coming up next, the other feel-good story of Daytona and Speed Weeks, Brian Keselowski making the Daytona 500 with a car that shouldn't even have been there, out of money, slowest car in qualifying, yet he got help from his brother. We'll talk to Brian Keselowski when we return to Pit Pass USA, part of the Power Up Motorsports here on VoiceAmericaSports.com.
Your internet flagship station for sports, Voice America Sports.
Get ready for a show that's going to take it to the next level of sports talk. Get ready for Sean Salisbury, Unfiltered. He's got 12 years of broadcast experience as an analyst for ESPN SportsCenter and NFL Live. And he has 10 years' experience as a player with the Seahawks, Colts, Vikings, and Chargers, as well as the Winnipeg Blue Bombers of the CFL. You'll hear the truth and not the sidelines. Sean Salisbury, Unfiltered. Unfiltered is not for the faint of heart. Tune in every weekday at 7 a.m. Pacific Time, 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Sports Channel.
We some hard hitters, we some hard hitters.
Hard-hitting radio is a new kind of sports and entertainment show. Your hosts are NFL veterans Mark McMillan and co-host Byron Evans. It's an hour of hater-free radio every week. You'll hear interviews with top athletes, celebrities, coaches, and fans. It's humor, hits, and conversation. Hard-hitting radio is on with McMillan and Evans. Listen Fridays at 3 p.m. Pacific Time, 6 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Sports Network.
The fans now have a voice to speak their mind. No holds barred.
They need a bitch's ass and then move on.
I just think that the coach made a mistake.
All crazy.
NFL, MLB, NBA, NHL. Speak up.
Speak up.
Or forever hold your mouth.
We ain't playing around here.
Voice America Sports.
You're listening to Pit Pass USA with Larry Henry. To leave comments or suggest future guests for the show, email us at LarryHenry@PitPassUSA.com. That's LarryHenry@PitPassUSA.com. Now, back to more of the fastest show in motorsports, Pit Pass USA with Larry Henry.
There were a lot of great stories this year at the Daytona 500, and the first one came in the Gatorade duels on Thursday. That's when the brothers, Brad and Brian Keselowski, hooked up, and Brian Keselowski got his dream fulfilled of making the Daytona 500, and he joins me now. And, Brian, I didn't really get a chance to see you in person. I did talk to your dad down at Daytona after you got in, but congrats. You still got to be flying high.
Oh, my God, absolutely. Yeah, it was absolutely a great deal. It worked out so well. I mean, everything all week, we just struggled all week long, and just to finally push it all together and of all people, Brad to me, you know, so that, it was such an awesome deal. It's really been a whirlwind since then. And, everything about it was just so cool.
Well, you got to help from everyone. I know the Penske people were trying to give you an engine, but unfortunately the engine mounts had to be changed and the fuel pump system. Ray Everham was jumping on board and was going to help out with tires. And I saw on Sunday with your first pit stop, the guys next to you from the Best Buy, they were actually helping to fuel the car, even though they're a Ford team.
Yeah, I mean, it's just because you make the Daytona 500 don't mean they just hand you a lot of cash, you know. So we struggled to try to come up with stuff. We struggled just to find hotel rooms down there, and you know, we're still trying to work off the cash we didn't have in the first place. So it's all part of it, though, you know. And when things like that happen, people want to be a part of it, and I just can't thank everybody enough. I mean, Ray Everham called me out of the blue. I don't think I've ever talked more than 2 seconds to the guy, and you know, I didn't even think he knew I existed at this point, you know, so it was cool. And then Roger Penske come over, and everybody from Penske Racing, I mean, to me, Roger Penske, especially being a Detroit kid, everybody knows who Roger is and what he's done. And that was such a big deal to me. It was like meeting the president, you know. And I've talked to Roger a couple times, but every time I see him, I'm just always awestruck with him. And, man, it was such a neat deal. And everybody in the garage area, I mean, people I've never even heard of or even knew that they knew me or knew of me or anything. I mean, people from other teams, officials, everybody come over and said something. And it was a very special deal for me.
You know, I found it interesting. I was telling some of the guys I was working on the PA Daytona with, I said, I may be the only reporter that's actually talked to Brian on a semi-regular basis until today. And I'm looking at Fox is down there, ESPN is down there, all the TV stations are down there after you qualify. And I went, this is a new experience for Brian.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was definitely new for me. I told them all, you know, after a couple of days of that, I said, man, I don't know what to do myself. I've not worked on my race car in almost 2 days. I got to get out of here. It was definitely crazy. It's something I've never, ever done before. But I'll tell you what, it was sure fun to do. And, you know, it's definitely opened up a whole lot of things for me. And I'm hoping they try to get some more stuff put together so I can continue to go racing and be competitive doing it while we're trying to make a program work here. So it was definitely a very cool deal.
What was really nice about it, and I think heartwarming, was they always talk about the NASCAR family, and it's kind of nebulous, and we help each other out. And yeah, you hear this and you hear that. But in your situation, it was like everyone wanted to help you, no matter who they were, because here's the little team that had really no prayer of getting in the Daytona 500. You were the slowest car in qualifying, and you're out there, you're spending your last penny to go live the dream, at least trying to qualify for the Daytona 500. You make it, and everyone in that NASCAR family did step up. And I think that was one of the most heartwarming things I saw.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was really cool. That always goes to show how big of a family this is. And, you know, people that I've never even talked to yet have got quotes out there saying how, you know, this is how NASCAR is, and, you know, they know about my family. And, I mean, I don't talk to Kevin Harvick and Jeff Burton, and it's not that I don't like them, but, you know, that's just not me. I'm out there working on my race car. They're doing their thing, and I've never talked to them guys in my life, so... to see the quotes that people put out, I mean, it's just amazing. And everybody likes that story because they know how hard we have struggled for years. And I mean, it's not a whole lot different yet today, but it's just my family's always been the same. There's been some good points, but there's been a lot of bad points. And, you know, we struggle along, but we've always made the best out of what we have. And, you know, we continue to try to do that. And everybody really appreciates that when, you know, we're out there, we're trying not to ruffle any feathers, but we're trying to make races and trying to make some things work. And, you know, I think a lot of people appreciate that.
I talked to your dad, Bob, on Friday morning. You weren't around at that time, and he was working on, there was like two or three guys. I'm watching one, an Auto City Speedway t-shirt. And I'm, you know, it was just the feeling. And I talked to him. I said, do you ever think you'd have two sons in the Daytona 500? And he just kind of looked at me and he just stopped for a second and said, you know, I really wanted to run in the Daytona 500 myself and never could do it. And won ARCA races and all. And I never even thought I'd have one son do it. I mean, this was almost maybe even bigger for your dad and mom.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, my dad has always struggled trying to just survive doing the ARCA deal, and he never got a chance to do what we're doing now. And honestly, we probably shouldn't even be doing what we're doing, you know, and it's a struggle. Everybody's had tough times, but we're trying to put something together here, and I really think we're moving places, you know. And for him, that was a really cool deal because he got to be a part of it, and it wasn't just something that we fell into either. We actually got a chance to race our way in the thing. And obviously without Brad's help, that wouldn't have happened. But everything about it was a really cool deal.
Now you've got Phoenix. I know you entered the car. Are you going to be able to get the car to go to Phoenix? I know your dad told me you got 2 days of work to get the car ready to go.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Or more. we're really busting our hump trying to make things happen here. Honestly, we're still in the paint shop with it. So it might be just a little bit. And, you know, I think we can make it, but it's going to be really tough. I don't like to go to the racetrack unprepared. I mean, we've done it, but it really is not a very good deal. You get to the track and after it kind of looks at you like, well, how come you haven't done this yet? And, you know, it's not the way we want to go. So we've gotten ourselves because of making the race, and we've gotten ourselves to the point where at least we don't just have to show up to try to make a dollar. We're trying to, put something together nice here and try to bring sponsors in, and the only way you're going to do that is by running decent and looking right. And if we have to sit back, we'll sit back. But I don't want to do that. I really want to go to Phoenix. I love that place. That's our first NASCAR start was. So I think I can go there and make the show, and, you know, if I can just run decently competitive, that's what I'm looking for. I don't think I'm going to win the race, but, you know, I want to go and get some laps in. That was the bad thing about Daytona, is that I didn't get to get many laps in with them guys. So that's what I want to do. I just want to go and put my time in and, you know, let these guys know that I'm here to race, but I'm not here to mess them up. And I just, that's what we're here for. I think we can make things happen.
What was it like, though, at the beginning of the Daytona 500 in your starting position, and you're running up there with the big dogs for several laps at the biggest stage NASCAR has?
Man, I'll tell you what, it's pretty cool. But I probably had more of a tough time with it when I went there for the Daytona test in December than I did with it when they started the 500. And it's because I've never been on the track with these guys before. I mean, I've been there at the track, but never with them. And when I started that test and everybody got going and there was 18-car draft back and kind of, you know, I'm not really sure why this two-car deal worked as good as it did. But back then in the test, we all ran in a big pack. And, you know, to me, that was more nerve-wracking because these guys don't know me from nobody. And, you know, after I got done with that test, I felt like I earned a little bit of respect with these guys, knowing that at least I wasn't going to go out and just wreck them all. And that's a big thing for everybody. They don't care if you win the race. They don't care if you do anything. They just don't want you to cause them a problem. And that to me, was bigger than anything. When that 500 started, I was finally, that was probably the first time I got to the point where I wasn't awestruck with everybody around me. And because I felt like I belonged there. And I felt like I proved that through the 150. And I felt like when that 500 started, I wasn't worried if that was Kurt Busch in front of me. And I wasn't worried if that was Jeff Gordon in front of me, because I earned my spot just like everybody else did. And, you know, once you get in a race car, drivers, you kind of zone out anyway. You're just into that mode, like, hey, that guy's in front of me, I want to beat him. You know, so that to me, that was great. I finally got to the point where I could zone that awestruck part of it out and just go back to racing again. So I thought that was a really cool deal. I tell you what, I was pretty overwhelmed with everything going into the race. Once I got in the car, I was sure happy just to get to that point again.
You know, I thought you were going to get through the incident that took you out of the race. I was watching it, and you got around one, you got around another, and unfortunately there were so many cars spinning, they finally nailed you. And boy, you came within inches of surviving this thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually seen the wreck coming. We're going down the back stretch, and actually Kurt was on my rear bumper with a couple guys on his, and I seen it coming, and I started kind of waving off and backing off. Yeah, I mean, I was right on Mikey's bumper getting into turn three, and by the time they all started wrecking, I was about 15 car lengths back. But you can't just stop, because the guys behind you are going to run through you too. So the guys behind me ended up turning left and getting out of the wreck, and I seen it coming. I backed off, and I got a little bit of a double zero, but it wasn't a lot. And then I missed the 15, and I got back on the gas, and all of a sudden here comes the 71, and it wasn't nothing he could do. He got clipped in the right rear and sent up into me. So it's just part of it. I mean, it's kind of a bummer deal for a really good weekend, you know. So I can't sit here and complain about it. It's unfortunate that it happened, and unfortunately the car's wrecked, and not a lot you can do about it now. But you know what? I still get to say I started the Daytona 500. I started it.
The last thing I wanted to ask you about, what's ahead? Are you going to be able to get some sponsorship and put deals together and be able maybe to run for Ray Bestis Rookie of the Year?
Well, I sure hope so. You know, definitely this does not hurt. It doesn't hurt at all, and I always said that, you know, running good isn't always the cure-all to get a sponsor, but it sure doesn't hurt to do and prove to people that you can do that. So my version of running good right now is making races, you know, and there's a lot of different levels of race teams in NASCAR right now, and there's a lot of haves and have-nots and never will be, you know, so I'm trying to get out of the never will be and at least be a have-not at this point, so... we're trying to put some programs together. You know, I'll tell you what, I got so much press out of doing the Daytona 500 that you know, I really think there's some things coming down the road here. But, you know, those things have been down the road before and never happened. So, all we can do right now is just worry about ourselves. And if we can go to races and keep making them, then that's what we need to do. And the sponsorship stuff will almost kind of fix itself, you know, and to deal with guys like Roger Penske and things like that. I mean, honestly, it's not like they've promised me anything, but they're taking notice. So whether that means anything or not, I don't know yet. But I sure like to think that if we can put something together that we can make something work here.
Well, Brian, keep that smile and that great attitude going. You made every short track racer in America that's dreamt about going to the Daytona 500 the happiest people in the world, along with you and your entire family this past weekend. And I hope you get to make that long drive to Phoenix and everything's ready to go.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
That's Brian Keselowski. I actually taped that yesterday because they were working on the car, and they hope to be on the road today headed to Phoenix, and weren't sure if they could even get a cell phone reception wherever they might be. But that just tells you his attitude. And like I said, I know Brian. I know the struggles. They're from right here in my area, and I talk to him whenever I get to the racetrack. And I remember Phoenix last year in November when I was out there before nationwide qualifying, and he said, I don't know whether we're going to qualify. We got to qualify on time. We got an engine that's going south, but we can't afford a new one, and he made it in. And just to see that, and the little guy, I mean, they weren't wearing uniforms back in the garage. They're in blue jeans and just regular T-shirts. Racetrack, like I said, Auto City Speedway, which is up north of Flint here in the state of Michigan. It was just so great to see that, and hopefully you got a sense of what Brian Keselowski is all about. Next up, we're going to turn our attention to the NHRA Full Throttle Drag Racing Series. They gear up this weekend with their season opening event in Pomona. We will talk to Alan Johnson, the Mopar Dodge Avenger driver in Pro Stock, when we return to Pit Pass USA, part of the Power Up Motorsports Series at PointsAmericaSports.com.
Is a beauty.
It's a fly ball deep right field. Back goes O'Neill. He's at
tough
the
shot.
Got it with 2.8 seconds left
to left. I don't care where they put him. This one is out of here.
From high school to the pros, we cover everything.
Let your voice be heard. Voice America Sports.
Are you ready for an old school in your face discussion of professional college and high school football? Tune in for talk on a variety of football-related topics on the program From Under the Helmet with your hosts, Derek Enard and the coach, Al Gross.
You will hear the week's headlines and straight talk from the hosts and their weekly guests that are personal and provocative.
From Under the Helmet is broadcast every Monday at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Sports Channel.
Get the inside scoop on the Georgia Bulldogs. Tune in to Keelan Johnson on College Football Game Day, on the radio, and every day on KeelanJohnson.com. On Keelan's Keeping It Real Radio, you can talk to Keelan and his former teammates about the Bulldogs, college football, and all things sports. Keelan's the go-to analyst for Bulldog football on pre- and post-game television on KeelanJohnson.com. And now, every week on the Voice America Sports Channel. Tune in every college game day for Keelan Johnson, Keeping It Real Radio. Saturdays at 11 a.m. Eastern and 8 a.m. Pacific.
Your internet flagship station for sports.
Voice America Sports.
You're listening to Pit Pass USA with Larry Henry. To leave comments or suggest future guests for the show, email us at LarryHenry@PitPassUSA.com. That's LarryHenry@PitPassUSA.com. Now back to more of the fastest show in motorsports, Pit Pass USA with Larry Henry.
Well, this weekend, the NHRA Full Throttle Drag Racing Series kicks off its 2011 campaign out in Pomona, California. And the gentleman that's joining me now is hoping when all is settled at the end of the year back at Pomona, he is the Pro Stock Champion for 2011. Alan Johnson joining me now, the driver of the Mopar Dodge Avenger. Alan, welcome.
Hey, thanks, Larry. Appreciate you having me on.
It's been kind of a busy time for you. You've been doing a lot of testing, haven't you, the last few weeks?
Yeah, we've been in Bradenton, Florida three times this winter, probably for a total of 50-plus runs. With three different cars, so a lot of getting ready for the big show this year.
Now, didn't you just when you were down in Bradenton set what we would call an unofficial record? You got down like a 6.498 pass.
Yeah, we was able to make several runs in the low 50s and went out there. Weather conditions were just right, and we laid down what would be a world record if it had been done with everybody else around. But, yeah, it was a good run.
had the air to do it, you know, and I think you'll see the same thing, maybe even Pomona, if it's going to be cool, like they're saying, and overcast, you might see 40 run out there.
Obviously, as you said, you've done a lot of testing in the off season, and you've been at this business for a while. Is it you decided this is the year where we're really going after? Did things change for you coming into this year?
Yeah, we're really mad about last year because we should have done better. We finished the year on a crappy finish. The car was inconsistent, the chassis. Just several things happened to just knock us out of it. And we're really going into 2011 mad. And we know we can do it. We can just be more consistent. I think we got a new Dodge Avenger that is more consistent, bigger window. So that's what we need to make this go up and down the track every time.
Alan, you talked about the consistency thing. When you take a look though at last year, you, I think were top qualifier 8 times, including the last 4 in a row. So at least you got yourself in the right position in a lot of the events last year.
Yeah, where it was giving us trouble was on Sunday, though. The chassis we had last year after NHRA done the 1090 weight rule, it would just flex and give in the back of the car. And we just, on Sunday, it was just very inconsistent in a very narrow window. When it was fast, yeah, it was fast. But it shook the tires a lot, so We're looking to correct that this year and be there on Sunday.
Could you explain that 1090 rule for those that aren't that much into NHRA, exactly what that is?
Well, it's on the rear of the car. You have to weigh the front of the car and the whole car and then the rear of the car, and they give us a minimum weight rule after the Phoenix fiasco of 1090 minimum weight on the rear. And we had been building the cars to be lighter and lighter and lighter on the rear, and so we make them fast. And when they put that rule on us, it just really made our cars inconsistent on the starting line because we had made them lighter on the rear and they were flexing. So hopefully we've got that corrected this year.
Now, you also, you talked about Bradenton down in Florida testing, but were you with the group, I believe, in Las Vegas this past week testing?
Yeah. Actually, we're still there. This is the final day, and then we're going over to Pomona. But we've been there for 4 days, made 12, 14 runs so far, and today we're going to put in what we consider our couple of best engines, make a couple of hits on each of them, and hopefully be ready to go over there and light the board the first run.
How close can what you do in Las Vegas transfer to Pomona? They're not that far apart. You can drive there in, what, about 3 hours, I think, or so?
It's a little bit different over here because the barometer's so low, altitude, and Pomona's more sea level. So, close, probably within 500 or 600 of one another. We went to 64 here. Over in Pomona, I think at the end of the year, we went to 54 for the number one qualifier. So a little bit of difference.
We're talking with Alan Johnson here in Pit Pass USA, the man behind the wheel of the Mopar Dodge Avenger in the NHRA Full Throttle Drag Racing Series Pro Stock Division. Again, they kick off their new season in Pomona. And Alan, when you look at the competition in pro stock, Greg Anderson, Greg Stanfield, Mike Edwards, Jason Lyon, Jed Coughlin, the list goes on and on. It's pretty tough to come away with the championship. You finished sixth last year. Is it just you've got to get those rounds on? I hear that from everybody in any division. I got to get round wins, round wins, round wins. And a lot of people say, well, doesn't that mean that you still got to be the number one guy at the end of the weekend? It really is the round wins, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, you want to win races, and to win the championship, it's all about points. So, you know, if you could take those last six races and say, I want to be runner-up at every one of them, you're probably going to be the champion because nobody's going to win all six of them. But, yeah, very, very important when you get to the countdown to be one of the top 10 and to just build all those points, bonus points, everything. It's all counts. I finished sixth, as you said, but one round win, and I think I'm all the way up to third, maybe. So, big points are big.
Absolutely so, and winning is great too. And you've luckily been also able to win the Mopar race out in Denver the last several years for your sponsor, which is always good when you win the one that the guy they're giving you some dollars has their name on.
Yeah, that puts a bigger pen in their hand when they got the check. And, you know, it gives all the people that support us at Chrysler and Mopar year in and year out. They're all together out there, and it really makes for a big party out there for all those people that support us and are behind us. So, yeah, couldn't ask for anything better than that.
What are you looking for this weekend out of Pomona? You said the weather is probably going to be cool out there. And it's an interesting facility because you have to be done. They have sound restrictions, and you got to be done like at, I don't know, 1 in the afternoon. It's kind of crazy out in Pomona. But what do you expect this weekend?
You know, I said to another reporter just the other day, I'm going into every race to be number one qualifier, to get all the bonus points, and to win the race. And, you know, that's what our team is going to do all year, and to be consistent. That's our big thing, be consistent and don't give away rounds.
Alan, I got to ask you about a prize pupil of yours. You've been teaching a little bit in pro stock, and that's a guy I got to see because I just got back from 26 days at Daytona. Kurt Busch, who won the Bud Shootout and then won his own Gatorade duel down at Daytona. He's going to be running a pro stock event coming up down in Gainesville in a few weeks.
Yeah, you know, it's been a lot of fun doing this with Kurt. We've been together about three times this winter down in Bradenton testing. He's got a really good feel of the car. He's a great student. He's got a fire in his belly to do this, and we want to help him get there. So I think he'd have won. I think he would have three-peated down there in Daytona if they hadn't had that wreck on the first restart. Him and Kyle had a push going, and he was going to the front. Had that wreck, and then he got blocked on that end. But he had a great week. I sent him an email. I said, dude, you had a great week. Go win Phoenix. So.
Well, he was down there with you in Bradenton there during Speed Weeks, wasn't he? A little bit in between when we had a few days off between the Bud Shootout and the Gatorade Duels and the Daytona 500. So he decided he had the need for speed again.
Yeah, on Wednesday we tested right before he came down there, and I think they started running on Thursday. So he was going 210 mile an hour in 6 seconds one day and 206 mile an hour and whatever on that back straightaway down there the next day.
Are you surprised at the way Kurt is taken to the pro stock car, and is he a challenge to possibly win when he runs at Gainesville?
You know, he's just a natural, and I think anytime he gets in a car of any kind, he's a threat to win. So don't count him out.
Yeah, well, that's going to be interesting to watch him, and he might be your biggest adversary when you get down to Gainesville coming up in March. But it's very interesting to see him do that, and that may bring in some crossover fans, which I know the NHRA is trying to build the audience. You've got a great core audience, but that's going to help the overall series.
Well, you know, it's good for our class, pro stock. I feel like we sort of get slided a little bit on some of the television coverage and stuff. So anything we can bring to the table to get pro stock coverage and get the fans behind pro stock, you know, we welcome it.
You know, that's kind of interesting because there was a time when pro stock was the division in NHRA.
Well, you know, I say it all the time. You take a homeless guy and put him on TV every day for a week in national TV. Everybody's going to want to talk to him and see him by the end of the week. So it's sort of like chicken and egg. Whoever gets the most coverage seems like that's who the fans want to see. And hopefully we can start promoting our pro stock gig a little better, and people can really see how complicated and hard these cars are to drive, and get some of those other fans that like to hear the explosions and blow up and stuff over our way.
Now, does that also come down to, say, the manufacturer stepping up a little bit? You know, Ford, Dodge, GM, you know, everybody stepping up a little bit to push their product out there and get the word out?
Yeah, I think the rivalries of old and pro stock are coming back with the reinvention of the car industries in Detroit. And I know Chrysler and management and Dodge and Mopar, everybody that's in management have a fire, a new fire in them, and everything's really more upbeat than I've seen it in a long time. And I think you're seeing the same thing with the other manufacturers. So, yeah, maybe we'll get that rivalry really heated up again and get the fans behind it and give us all something to cheer about.
That'd be great seeing the fans duking it out. I'm a GM fan. I'm a Dodge fan. Kind of like the old days.
I'll tell you, the Dodge and Mopar, you know, they say the junior nation. I tell you what, we've got a Mopar nation too. And with the Dodge brand, and it's amazing, these fans. They are just so, so loyal.
Absolutely so. Well, Alan, I want to wish you the best of luck this weekend as you kick off the new season in Pomona, and good luck all season long.
Thank you, Larry.
That's Alan Johnson again, the NHRA Full Throttle Drag Racing Series. New season begins this weekend, Pomona, California. It's out by Ontario. It's just down the road, really, from what is now, what is it? I always screw it up. I always say California Speedway. You know what it is, Ontario. But that's where the racetrack is, and they're just down the freeway from each other, not that far apart. But should be great to see all that back in action, and Alan Johnson going for the championship in Pro Stock. Pro Stock's really beginning to take off, which is great because that's the one where the cars look like the cars that you drive. Yeah, it's nice to watch the Nitro, the funny car, and the top fuel cars, but I think a lot of you still love watching those Pro Stockers go down the dragway. I can't wait to see Kurt Busch go down the drag strip at Gainesville in the month of March. Anyway, next up, I'm going to give you some of my thoughts of the Daytona 500, the NHRA, and even IndyCar doing some wacky things these days. We'll talk about that and more when we return to wrap up Pit Pass USA here on the Power Up Motorsports Series at VoiceAmericaSports.com.
The fans now have a voice to speak their mind. No holds barred.
They need a bitch's ass and then move on.
I just think that the coach made a mistake.
All crazy.
NFL, MLB, NBA, NHL. Speak up.
Speak up.
Or forever hold your mouth.
We ain't playing around here.
Voice America Sports.
Okay, sports fans, here's your opportunity to discuss football, America's favorite sport. On an annual basis, millions of people attend, watch, and listen to football, both pro and college. Ray Ellis Sports, an internet talk radio show, was developed with the fan in mind. Join host former Philadelphia Eagles and Cleveland Browns strong safety, Ray Ellis, on Voice America Sports every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific for exciting, interactive football discussions from the fans' perspective. Tune in every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific to Ray Ellis Sports, right here on the Voice America Network. And let's talk football.
Football and so much more is the focus of Planet Gridiron with Damian Anderson. Join the former Arizona Cardinals running back for a show that mixes, well, a little bit of everything. Damian brings to the program life experiences playing football, and we'll talk about his variety of successes both on and off the field. The goal is to provide you with a fun perspective on life, family, success, and of course, football. Tune in to Planet Gridiron with Damian Anderson, Fridays at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Sports Channel.
Your internet flagship station for sports, Voice America Sports.
You're listening to Pit Pass USA with Larry Henry. To leave comments or suggest future guests for the show, email us at LarryHenry@PitPassUSA.com. That's LarryHenry@PitPassUSA.com. Now, back to more of the fastest show in motorsports, Pit Pass USA, with Larry Henry.
Welcome back. Well, if you missed the beginning of the show, I did mention that for the 26 days I was down in Florida working PA for all the racing at Daytona International Speedway, starting back in January with the Rolex all the way through Sunday's Daytona 500. Got to see a lot of great racing during that time. And what was really interesting about the Daytona 500, I did an appearance with Jamie McMurray, the defending Daytona 500 winner, on Sunday morning before the Daytona 500 in one of the hospitality areas. I was emceeing it as part of my duties down there. And he was running a little late, so I'm talking to the crowd and doing various things and bringing up facts. And I decided I'd ask them what they thought about the 2x2 racing. I kind of call it the Noah's Ark racing at Daytona. And I said, okay, who likes it? And I heard couple of people applaud. Who doesn't like it? And it was just overwhelming, the number of people that didn't like it. I actually liked it because I'd rather see cars race instead of seeing them single file around there. And it really surprised me. And I talked to some people after the race. They said, you know, I really didn't like it, but then, boy, when I was watching that at the end, it was really exciting. I said, yeah, Daytona's about getting to the end of the race, and then it comes down to coming off the fourth turn and who gets pushed where and wins the race. And it really surprised me. I thought it was great racing. I thought the nationwide race was exciting with Tony Stewart pulling it out, the Michael Waltrip winning. Oh, by the way, the team has been docked points. Remember the rear spoiler going kaput at the end of the race? Everybody looking at it going, what's going on? The team got docked points. Now, the driver's not... It doesn't matter to him because he's not running full-time in the series, but the team did, which is kind of interesting what NASCAR is doing there. And you still got to wonder about, did that fall over on purpose? He said, well, maybe it got bumped. Who knows? But those were exciting races. I thought they were outstanding. And the other controversy that has come up is cheering in the press box. There's this rule about cheering for your teams and jumping up and down, and I can understand that. But you see what happened on Sunday. When Trevor Bayne won the Daytona 500 and the Wood brothers returned to victory lane, I was cheering. Luckily, my microphone was off in the PA booth. I think we were all cheering that were in that room. And a lot of, quote-unquote, journalists, basically reporters, were cheering too. And there are some people who say, well, that's just wrong. You should never do that. I say, why not? Why not? When you see something that is truly great, truly wholesome, truly newsworthy, truly makes you feel good as a human being with the Wood Brothers, a group that has been in NASCAR since it started, who have struggled, who are back, who have a Cinderella story with a 20-year-old rookie winning the Daytona 500. Why not cheer? What is wrong with that? It's not like you're cheering all through the race. And there's a big controversy about that, and I just kind of poo-poo the whole thing. I think it's fine. As I told someone today, hopefully the reporters that were covering World War II, when the U.S. declared victory, they cheered. I hope they did. I hope they stood up and cheered. And that was the great feeling, and I think that story was great. I was cheering when Brian Keselowski got pushed into the Daytona 500 starting field by his brother, knowing Brian, knowing Brad, knowing his dad Bob and his mother Kay and the entire family, it was just heartwarming, that feel good story. And I actually wrote all about that in my latest blog, which I called the Daytona 500, the Great American Story. They always say the Daytona 500 is the Great American Race. I called it the Great American Story, and you can read that at exhaustfumes.wordpress.com. And I just think you felt good about it, and people were talking about it. And I understand the TV ratings for the Daytona 500 were up. Nationwide were down. Trevor Bayne, maybe he's going to bring in those young people. Great, refreshing guy. I had a chance to sit beside him for 20 minutes on Monday morning about 9 o'clock at Daytona. I got to see his champions ring. He showed it to me. Just a good kid, and I hope he keeps his head screwed on straight. I think he will, but you know, you never know with fame and fortune and all the pressures that are going to be on him. But just a delightful young man. At least that's my impression of him. And I don't see him all the time. And as I said, I only had 20 minutes sitting beside of him, but it seemed to be very, very good. But hopefully you got a good feeling out of that too. And a great way to start the NASCAR season. Now we really move into the meat and potatoes with going to Phoenix this weekend, and we'll see what comes out of there. IndyCar made an announcement yesterday. They're going to wind up their season in Las Vegas. They're really tied in now since International Speedway Corporation, which is the Daytonas, which is the Michigans, which is Chicagoland, which is Watkins Glen, have basically severed their ties with IndyCar. They've now gotten into bed with Bruton Smith and SMI, and that's the Charlottes, that's the Texas, that's the Infineon Raceway, that is Las Vegas Motor Speedway, that is New Hampshire, that is Kentucky Speedway. Well, now they're saying their season-ending race, they're going to give $5 million to someone who's not a regular driver that shows up and wins that race. Here's my problem. Are we in Barnum and Bailey? $5 million to win a race, if you come in, it's a one-off, somehow you're going to win it. One, that's not really safe these days to do that. Secondly, $5 million is more than twice what you pay the winner of the Indianapolis 500. And what you're saying is, we're going to pay someone who out of the blue comes here at races to bring us some publicity, a bunch of money if they win, but if you're a regular, guess what they get? About $50,000 if they win in Las Vegas. That's wrong. That is just wrong. They're doing two races at Texas, like they used to do at Michigan one time when they used to run two races in one day. And that's what they're going to do at Texas. It's gimmicks. It's gimmicks. It's gimmicks. It's gimmicks. It's gimmicks. That is not going to bring race fans back with gimmicks. I'm sorry. I'm an IndyCar guy. This is just getting out of hand. You have to be real. You can't do gimmicks. And if I'm a driver, if I'm Dario Franchitti, I win the Indianapolis 500 and I get, $2 million, and someone goes to Vegas and somehow they do pull this off and they get $5 million, I'm going to be a little PO'd. There is no question about that. But I don't know. We'll see what happens. I just do not like that at all. I just think they're going down the wrong road, and they're getting too Bruton Smithigized because Bruton does all sorts of wild and crazy things. Anyway, back again, my blog, exhaustfumes.wordpress.com. You can send me an email, LarryHenry@pitpassusa.com. LarryHenry@pitpassusa.com. Also, check us out on Facebook, which is Pit Pass USA with Larry Henry. About a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, I put up a bunch of videos with Courtney Force, Ashley Force Hood, Robert Height, Mike Neff on that page. And also, you can find those at YouTube, which is Pit Pass USA. Let's see, what else do I have? Oh, Twitter, Pit Pass USA. You can go there. Of course, you can always check the archives on the show. You can simply go to pitpassusa.com. And that will take you to our page. We're also on iTunes. Share those with your friends, with your neighbors. And hopefully you're going to be here every Wednesday night, 7 o'clock, listening to the show. And hopefully we're going to bring you a lot of great guests, as we did tonight. I want to thank Eddie Wood. I want to thank Brian Keselowski. I want to thank Alan Johnson. And I want to thank you for listening. And I'm going to try to adjust to all the cold and the snow back here in Michigan after 78-degree days in Daytona. We will see you next week right back here on Pit Pass USA, part of the Power Up Motorsports Series on VoiceAmericaSports.com.
For this week, time to get ready for another great week of racing to talk about next time on Pit Pass. Tune in next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, for another fast-paced 200-mile-per-hour edition of Pit Pass USA with Larry Henry on Power Up, your motorsports channel.